Welcome to Generation Wine Like This. I'm Casey.
I'm Liz.
And I'm Alec.
And this is the podcast where we look back at some of our favorite questionable part, pop culture moments from our childhood. And this week, you know, it's another one where I feel like I have to apologize to my co-host. Because I put this on the list and then I watched it and I felt sorry. But this week we're watching Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. No, that's
the worst Star Wars movie, by the way.
Oh, those are them strong words.
I'm not kidding. It's on multiple lists. It says this is the worst of the Star Wars movies.
I will come out the gate and say the second one is the worst one because I
the second, like Empire Strikes Back or Episode Two.
Episode Two. This one. Well, I don't know. Can you really quantify racism? That's actually the biggest question we have for tonight. So maybe the first one is the worst one. I forgot about
and
that.
Also the child actor in this movie is...
Hey.
Okay, hold up.
I know, we don't need to get...
First of all, we're not going to bully children, but second of all, he was not given anything to work with. Like, that script was abominable. Abominable?
Oh.
Like snowman.
Before we get into everything else, I did want to make a public apology more pointed to the two of you and to our listeners. Because last episode, I kept on complaining about an hour and 40 minute long movie. Like it was something that was long. Like it was something that was hard to watch. And then I started this and it's 2 hours and 11 minutes. I wasn't even a minute in and I said, well, I have to make an apology for this one, don't I?
Yeah, no, yesterday I was like, oh my god, I have to finally watch this movie. If I don't watch it now, it's not going to happen. It was like 4 p.m. I was like, I'm not going to watch it any later than this or I'll fall asleep.
On that note, did y'all watch this growing up? Did you like it?
Liz just said, yes.
I did. You know what? And I also had a lot of the, what are they called? They were like mini clips, but like they were Star Wars. Clips? It wasn't hit clips. I think they might have been called mini clips. They looked like dog tags, basically. Uh-huh. And I had a chain that they were all on. And, like, it came with, like, a little action figure, too. But then you would, like, put these little, like, chip things, like, on something. And then, like, a character would, like, say a line from the movie. Like, it was, like...
So, I think I know what you're talking about. Because I think it was, like, a big chunky, like, bluey silver thing, maybe. But it's, like...
Yeah.
Qui-Gon Jinn talks into it in the movie, and they're like, here, and then it just had voice lines from the movie in it. I think I had it,
too. Yeah, and, like, I had, like, so many of these stupid chip things. Like, I mean, I think they were probably, like, me and my brother, like, had them together,
Were these, like, a purchase thing, or was this, like, a Happy Meal, like...
No, it was, like, purchase. Like, you would get them, like, and then you got, like, the action figure, I think, with it, but, like, you could have the dog tags all on, like, a neck... Like, I just remember I feel like there was times where it's, like, oh, we're going to Rainforest Cafe. Gonna wear my dog tag, Star Wars dog tag.
Okay, if Gen Z and like Generation Alpha want to bring back Y2K, then they have to bring back hit clips and like mini clips. Like, you have to embrace the whole thing if you're gonna do it. Commit to the bit. To answer your question, yes, I did watch this. I think I watched this in the theaters with my dad and my brother. Yeah, I remember being like, I'm confused. And I remember when my dad showed me like all the original ones, I was like, I'm still confused. Like, I know, understand this guy's a bad guy and this guy's supposed to be the hero. Like, I understood those points, but like the whole politics of it, I was confused. So yesterday when I sat down to watch, I was like, I'm going to understand it at the age of almost 35. And it started and I went, I'm confused.
Yeah. Honestly, when I was watching this, I was like jealous that I used to have the attention span that I had as a child to have enjoyed watching this movie because it's like I didn't have the distraction of a phone. So it's like I just watched this movie and I was like, I love this. It's so cool. And like, whoa. And now I try to watch a movie that I'm slightly bored by for like 5 minutes and I'm like, let's check Instagram. What's going on? And it's like, I a little bit hate myself, but that's a whole nother thing. But first of all, I feel bad for younger people because they don't have that anymore. You know, like there isn't even an opportunity to watch shitty movies that you don't realize are shitty because you have nothing better to watch, you know?
Oh yeah. You don't have like the TBS matinee, you know? We don't have a random weird edit of Showgirls that you're watching and being like, this movie slaps because there's nothing else on. You exactly. you actually can choose whatever you want.
TBS, what was it, Dinner in a Movie?
Yes.
Beans and cornbread. Bum, 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 beans and cornbread.
See,
I saw a TikTok randomly that was just like a 5 minute long thing from that, like the host like introducing the movie and making their food, and it bitch slapped me back to like 2002. It was great.
I was thinking about like how the made for TV movie is a lost art because there's no reason to have it anymore.
And well, it's like, just direct to streaming.
Well, and
yeah, and it's not the same.
No,
it's not.
This is my rant too, and I'm going to take this moment now so I don't have to rant talk about this movie a little bit longer. Prestige TV has ruined everything in my life because
life.
I think we had this conversation.
Have
we? Did we have this conversation?
I think,
did we have it on air?
No, what were we talking about?
Well, we talked about Sister Sister. Was it during that?
It might have been because
we were talking about 90s sitcoms.
Yeah.
Like, I think we spun onto that.
It's just, it's ruined so much. We need low quality things again. They're so enjoyable. They're much low stress. They're easy to watch and easy to digest. But also, like, you can renew that stuff easier. No wonder shows keep on failing.
But then at the same time, any of the stuff that I feel like is that vibe is not, like, I see trailers for, like, 911 on CBS or whatever the fuck, and I'm like,
well, that's
who
a
is
little...
watching this shit?
Oh, that's like, fair.
And it's like, I think the problem is, Casey, that bad TV doesn't look like 90s bad TV, and that's just not going to be a thing that's going to happen anymore. Like, I just think there's also something to be said about the look of, like,
yes, I think that's what I mean, is like low quality TV versus high quality TV, because we still have like HBO had Prestige TV when we were growing up still. Like, Oz was like a big show and like well-produced,
well written. I mean,
even like
The Sopranos or whatever.
The Sopranos, But we also had shows like, you know, Home Improvement that were going on at the same time, which like
but
had
there is
lower
still
quality. Well, what I mean is that they had lower quality cameras. They had cheaper sets. Like, the expectation for those shows just visually made it lower, so it was easier to digest. Like soap opera, you weren't expecting them to be high caliber acting because you saw what it looked like. Now everything to me kind of looks the same because we're all using the same cameras for the most part because it's all digital. And I think now as a consumer, when I watch it, my brain is also like, this is bad because it is filmed better than what the quality is. And it's just like a mind, I don't know if that makes sense. Like, it confuses my mind of expecting it to be higher quality.
I wonder on, like, the TV show front, like, the sitcom front, if a part of that was also, like, the move away from, like, filming it in front of a studio audience. Like, not having to make, like, almost a theatrical set. So it, like, when you can take the camera away from that sort of setup, like, then you can actually make things either look better or you can film them on location. You know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And we also have like the studio. We are so off topic. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I just realized what time it was.
We need to get on to Star Wars because it's a long. I mean, I don't have that much to say about it, to be honest.
Racism.
But...
we'll talk about a lot of it. It's me, so we got a lot. But yeah, so I watched this as a kid and I loved it. But I also like loved the three original Star Wars movies. So the build up to this one, there's a lot of anticipation. I also don't know. I know Liz probably didn't have this experience because you're not the youngest child. But, like, my older siblings talked about Star Wars all the time. And there also were, like, schoolyard rumors about what was going to happen in the prequels. Because I guess, like, George Lucas literally talked about this stuff ad nauseum. So, like, oh, Anakin Skywalker is actually going to be Darth Vader. So going into the first one, we were already like, we know who this kid is. And it's like, oh, there's going to be a big battle by lava where Anakin Skywalker gets his hand cut off and he almost dies. And it's by, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, there was some stuff for some reason in schoolyard conversations that was already known before those movies ever came out.
So I wonder if it was, like, in books or something. I wonder if it was, if there was any, like, novels or something that people...
There are Star Wars novels. Like, they probably were written.
Oh, there's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton.
So, like, all of that stuff was known, so the anticipation I felt like for this movie was like, it's finally happening!
Casey, I don't know if that's so much as being the younger sibling or just having, like, straight men of that particular age around. You know, like, teenage straight brothers, and like for me, like my brother like loved Star Wars, and probably because my dad showed him Star Wars a lot when he was younger, and I just like was like, what, like they're entertaining, I'll watch them, but I don't go crazy for them. I don't want to get caught up in the lore of them.
But I do remember going to see this movie and loving it. But my strongest memory about this movie is that in Kansas City, I think in Independence specifically or in Raytown, there is a place called the Swap and Shop, which is a drive-in theater that during the day, they actually have like a big flea market that's set out. And you can buy pretty much anything there, including the best lemonade in the world. Loved it every time. Well, we bought a bootleg copy of The Phantom Menace. Wow. That someone recorded in the movie theater.
Yeah. That's a lost art, honestly.
Oh, it was so good. And the best part was, spoilers, we're going to spoil the whole movie. At the very end, when Darth Maul gets cut in half and he's falling and then his body splits, the entire audience breaks out in laughter. So, I have this huge core memory of just people being like, bah! Every time I watch it.
Is it specific? Is it when he falls into the hole or when his body separates?
When he split. Mm-hmm. When he split.
That's the craziness. Yeah.
The gag of it all. Yeah. The audience was like, finally something happened. Because we have been waiting. Okay. So a little bit about this movie. It was released in May 16th, 1999. People liked it, I guess. People also hated it.
It's all I was going to say, people fucking hated this movie.
People liked it enough to go see it. It did make, it had a $115 million budget, which actually I thought that was like so low for what they put into this.
That's actually not that bad. I mean, like Dune 2 just came out and it had $190 million budget.
But they didn't pioneer special effects.
I mean, Dune is. I will say Dune looks
better than this. Yeah. But yeah. We'll get to it. The stuff that they did in this movie was bonkers. And it was revolutionary, but I don't think it helped it. It did make $1.027 billion, though. So. Wow. So good for them. Good for them.
I mean, yeah. I guess if you want to say good for the evil corporation.
Yeah, good. George Lucas, the evil corporation.
Star Wars.
Now it's Disney. Back then it wasn't. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
It's just funny because his production company is just George Lucas. So it's wild to be like, that evil company,
Lucasfilms.
Yes. It's got a wild cast that I still don't understand still. Of Liam Neeson, Ewan McGregor, Natalie Portman, Jake Lloyd, which we'll come back to, is young Anakin Skywalker.
I mean, that's not that wild of a cast. He's never been in, like, anything else after this fucking movie.
Well, no. Because he was bullied at the age of, like, we'll come back 8. To it.
Oh, I forgot about that. Okay, I feel kind of bad now.
I'll also say he's currently in recovery, I think, at an institution. He has schizophrenia, which the mom
because
has
gotten
a record.
Because of what you said, Liz.
The mom has gone on record that it has nothing to do actually with the comments, that she kept her son strongly offline during all of it because she knew that it was going to be bonkers. There's a lot of original cast people from the original Star Wars movies that are back to play their roles. The biggest one to me is Frank Oz as Yoda. Love him always.
Except not the fucking like animatronic for Yoda.
I don't even know what they did. It's so weird. Apparently on the Newcomers podcast, they were talking about it, where the original Yoda puppet was, like, destroyed just because of age. And so, for some reason, they decided to remake it, but they wanted it to be more durable, so they made it out of silicone. And so it just looks scary. It doesn't look right, and I also think half the time it is CGI. Not a puppet. No, it's confusing, because I don't think it is, but all the stills of behind the scenes, it was an actual puppet. So I'm like,
just what they acted with, and then they superimposed...
I don't understand how they do half the stuff in this movie, because like some of the things I'm like, is that real or is that CGI? Like, I can't tell some of the times, and then some of the times you're like, obviously that's fucking CGI. But
I watched the making of movie that they created an accompaniment while they were actually like filming this. It was an hour long, so I put in some work. A few things from it that I thought were bonkers was, one is that, so Jar Jar Binks is the first, main cast member who's a fully CGI character, and the way that they did his performance was like the precursor to a mocap performance. They made this big silicone, like heavy bodysuit that actually had like lime green pinpoints on it so they could capture what was going on. Their original idea was that they were going to capture the like body like on the suit and then just add CGI to enhance some places. But when the CGI team actually started working on it, they're like, it's impossible to match up the shadows. Like, it just doesn't look as good. It's easier to make a full CGI thing based off of his body. So they ended up going with that anyway. Which I will say, Ahmed Best, the actor, he was in Stomp at the time. The other person who wanted to play Jar Jar Binks was Michael Jackson. And the way Ahmed Best found this out is that Michael Jackson had George Lucas, Ahmed Best, and Natalie Portman as, like, guests to go see his concert in London. So they see it, and then George Lucas was like, oh, yeah, he's one of my friends. We could probably go see him. And, like, Michael Jackson's security comes out from, like, a hidden door and is like, follow me, and, like, takes them behind the stage. And he was like, we're walking past these women who are, like, passed out in cots because it's a Michael Jackson concert, and they, like, do that, apparently. He's like, and took him to a random, like, back room where they meet Michael Jackson. And Michael Jackson's like, oh, so you're Jar Jar Binks? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, so he's the one. And he's like, what? And that was his whole full interaction until later on when George Lucas was like, oh, yeah, he wanted to play the part, but you beat him. And he's like, and that's how I met Michael Jackson? You didn't even tell me?
That is
you didn't
warn wild. Me?
It is so fucking weird.
Yeah.
That makes me think, like, George Lucas is a sociopath. Like,
I think you have to be, right? To make that much money in general.
No, has to. Well, to be sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, other CGI phenomenon things. Is I also think this was, if my research is correct, one of the first movies that utilized, like, a huge use of blue screen technology for their sets. They also, the editing for this is wild. Because instead of taking one take, he had them digitally splice together multiple takes of different people's acting to create like one shot. It was just weird of just like splicing everything together to get the scene he wanted.
Yeah, that just sounds like too much work.
Yeah. They did show Jake Lloyd's audition because George Lucas already had this idea of editing in his head. From what we saw, Jake Lloyd was not the strongest audition. There was this other kid who literally was like super professional and on it. But George Lucas was like, Jake's performance isn't the most consistent, but he does really strong choices. And I can splice together and edit all those choices to make a good performance.
I mean, I know I just got onto Liz for bullying a child, but did he make choices?
He made them, yeah.
He chose to say words.
I mean, it's like, I just think that it takes a very specific person, like, kid to be good at acting. Like, it's very hard. Like,
yeah.
And child actors, I don't know, even watching, like, something like Full House, where it's, like, I love Mary-Kate and Ashley, and, like, they're cute, and it's, like, it works, especially in that sitcom, like, world, so it's, like, not as obvious, but it's, like, they are just, like, delivering lines. They're not doing anything, like, and it just really sticks out in this movie, because it's, like, he's surrounded by this very serious, like, scenario, I mean, mostly serious. Mm-hmm. And it's like you have like Liam Neeson as the main person that's interacting with this child, and like
I will say it did seem very evenly matched when he had scenes with Natalie Portman, though, because Natalie Portman does not give anything in this movie.
Here's my thing, though. Even in like the documentary I watched, he was like, oh, Natalie's perfect. She just comes in and does everything perfectly. She's so good. I was a little worried about her at first, but she's really nailing it. And I think that's
what
alone,
he wanted.
Well, that's what speaks to it. He's like, oh, she did like two takes and it was done. We didn't need to get anything else. And so to me, like a child actor, if they have a bad performance, it's a sign of a bad director, because they need to be able to get a good performance from the child.
Yeah.
That's why it's a very different craft than just like normal directing. Like if you make kids movies, you have to interact differently. That's why Steven Spielberg is so good, because he got amazing performances out of those kids. George Lucas, I don't think, had that. I also think, and again, this is based off of almost nothing, he was so bogged down by the world building and by how things needed to function that superseded acting choices. Because, like, I get what he was trying to do with Anakin, but, like, it reads so flat. I get what he's trying to do with Amidala, but it makes Natalie Portman seem so flat. Same thing with Liam Neeson. Like, all of these characters are so flat But I understand in the world building how it makes sense. It's just not interesting to watch. The Trade Federation as like a villain makes sense, but it's boring.
I mean, does it? It doesn't make sense to me. I was like, this feels like me trying to be like, oh, I understand taxes.
But
and I don't.
I mean, the movie is literally about taxes.
Yeah.
Like, literally the beginning is like the Texas scrolling is like the Trade Federation imposed taxes. And it's like, I'm already bored. Like, we're 30 seconds 100%. Into this movie. And one of the most like iconic like movie scores is playing in the background. And I'm like, I'm bored.
John Williams is like conducting his heart out, writing his heart out. And then we're like, it's about taxes. But that's the thing where it's like, I get what you're going with this of having like, oh, it's an evil branch of the government that's trying to like corrupt the system to try and make more money off of it and trying to like fuck up things with the little power they have. Like, that could be interesting if you wrote it well, but it's not. It's just kind of like, this is our bad guy because it's Star Wars and this is our archetype. And then nothing happens with it, really.
And our bad guy is white people making an accent that is very offensive.
Which is,
at least one of them was white. I tried to look it up, and one of them
he was for sure
a white guy. So
a part of the documentary they showed, and it actually is like an animatronic mask that they're wearing, which is also why the lips are so awkward. Because it doesn't sync up with anything.
Well, and they were characters where I was like, I don't, is like half of their body CGI and half of them is like, they were weird to me because like, I mean, and I know some of it was having to do with like them being on a green screen when they're like walking out of the ships and stuff. Like,
yeah.
And so I think that was also like making them look more fake. But then I was like, but wait, they look real here. And it was like playing with my brain because I was like, I can't tell if these are like puppet thing or like people in costumes or
it's because they mixed it like weirdly practical effects and CGI effects. But again, it's one of the first movies to like ever do that, but they did it to such an extreme that you're just like, it's starting to make the real things also look fake, like more fake than they did before, because some of the puppetry on its own is actually really good. Like, just watching the documentary, I was like, oh, this looks great. And then watching the movie, I was like, this looks like CGI? Is it, though? I can't tell anymore.
Yeah.
Again, like, the puppet they used for Yoda looked great. But then watching the movie, I was like, he looks CGI. But I just saw this great puppet performance. What's happening? I don't know. We'll get into the plot right now, because I could keep on talking around, but just to try and ground some of the conversation. So I think this time I'm going to try and hit like points, and then we can maybe discuss things if we want to, or we can move on. The first like 20 minutes of this is so dense, but it also feels like nothing happens. So we meet, I don't even know who the main character of this movie is, actually. So I'm going to take that back right away. So there's two Jedis. We have Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn. They're going to meet with the Trade Federation to negotiate something about taxes. The Trade Federation, which
it's
are...
It's never such a gripping, you know, conceit to the beginning of a movie as ever existed.
We don't understand what's happening already. But also, the evil corporation's called the Trade Federation. They're like, we don't want the Jedi here, and start attacking them. So the Jedi flee to the nearest planet, which is Naboo. Which is what they were trying to negotiate about, I guess. They land on Naboo, which is now being invaded by the Trade Federation, who has an army of droids. They run into a creature. His name is Jar Jar Binks. He is a Gungan. Jar Jar Binks is like, I know a secret city where we can hide out. They go to the underwater city, and immediately they're like, we want to leave this city and go back to land. And so then they go through the core of the planet, which is supposed to be scary, looked like the rest of the ocean, and then they go back
lots of creatures in there, you know.
There were like four.
I will
just
say
really really big,
like,
yeah.
I will say that this, are we like stopping as you explain, or are you trying to explain everything?
Oh no, I was gonna just, the next thing I was gonna get off the planet. So then the next they meet Queen Amidala, who's in charge of the Naboo, and they decide to go to the Senate so that they leave the planet. Now we can talk about that. That literally is like 30 minutes of the movie, maybe.
Yeah.
And then it slows down a lot from here.
Well, I loved the underwater world when I was a kid. I thought it was so cool. I mean, I also wanted to be a marine biologist. Classic, you know.
Everyone 90s. Did in the 90s, yeah.
So I feel like I just loved the ocean in general, but it looks so bad. I mean, it's funny because I loved it so much as a kid, and I remember that being like a highlight of the movie. Obviously, we're going to talk about the main highlight of the movie later. I think we probably mostly agree on that. I don't know. We'll see. But I just thought the world building of this like area was so cool. Like all the little pods and stuff that was like underwater, and like the way that it was like the glass, like I like the shape of the windows, and like, I don't know. I just thought it was very cool when I was a kid.
I think the concept design for the whole movie is actually really cool. It's just bogged down by the execution. This is a movie that should have been made like at least 10 years later than it actually was to get what we wanted from it.
Yeah. I think I, as a kid, was more interested with the underwater stuff more so than what maybe Liz is alluding to as being the pod race scene. I can only imagine. Okay. In fact, I had a little toy of the boat that they drive when they're like getting chased by the fish. I had that at my grandma's house because I stayed with her a lot. And it had like, you know, it was like kind of flat, and then it had like the swirly kind of like helix tail to it. And I think you could put like a tablet, like a little like tablet of something in it, and it would like fizz, and it would like kind of move around in the bathtub.
That's cool.
It was really cool. I remember playing with it a lot, and it just like lived in the bathtub like my whole childhood, I feel like. Well, at least since 1999.
And that's the thing with the Star Wars movies that does get me with these early ones, because again, I think George Lucas had like a really clear vision of the worlds and how he wanted to like build up these different creatures and different civilizations. So I think the cohesive design of the Gungans makes sense, except for their leader, who oddly enough looks nothing like any of the other Gungans, and he's like a little toad like man, and everyone else is like a weird kangaroo person.
Kind of amphibian-y. Like
the king
like,
of the Zora looks completely different
than
the rest of
the Zora.
That's
literally what I was about to say. 100%. I was literally going to say that. Oh my god. I was like going to say, he's huge.
Remember when he's
compared
like
to
in Ocarina of Time when he's sitting on that ledge and he has to move it and he goes, and it takes like 5 minutes for him to move.
Amazing. But yeah, this whole movie is such a weird place to start because they're trying to introduce so much.
So much.
It's and a lot much. Of it doesn't have a big payoff.
No.
It just kind of happens. Like, it's kind of my thing with the underwater scene. As a kid, loved it. As an adult, I was watching it and I was like, so they literally went underwater just so we can establish who the Gungans are. And immediately, they were like, we need to leave. They're like, okay.
Well, even when Jar Jar is talking about the city, he's like, oh, I know where to go. And like, he was like, oh, this place will have all the important information. And then they're like, okay, take us there. And he's like, I can't go there. I'm scared. And it's like, why is everything like one step forward, two steps back? Like, it's just constantly like that.
And then the funny thing is that when they go to leave and they're like, okay, we're taking Jar Jar with us, he's like, I'd rather die here than die in the core. Like, but then he still walks with them. And I'm like, you make no sense. Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, Jar Jar is literally just like, oh, we need a comedic character, like, to hang out with the crew.
It's one thing to have, like, a cute comedic, like, C-3PO and R2-D2 in the first series, like, they're great comedic sidekicks, but, like, they took the idea, made it into a new character, and then just, like, fucking bashed the audience with the head for, like, 2 hours and 15 minutes, you know?
It's
too much.
Bad.
So much. And I don't even, rewatching it again, I didn't even hate Jar Jar Binks as much as I thought I was going to. I just hated the pacing and the storytelling and the plot of this movie. I thought all of that was worse.
I hated him still, but I think maybe part of it like was tied to pacing, because it's like every time something is happening, especially like something high stakes, like then you have to stop for 30 seconds so he can like fall down. It's like, okay, let's keep going, please. Like the stakes are void in this movie. It's just nothing.
I do like, there was a fan theory for a bit that Jar Jar Binks was actually the real leader of the Sith.
Oh, I remember that.
And that's one of my favorite things. And honestly, headcanon. I'll stick with it. It makes much more sense. Especially in the big fight at the end when he's fucking up and everything's going right. I was like, you're using the Force. Mm. I see you, bitch. but yeah, this whole first part is just to set up, I guess, characters and stuff that we'll see again. Because then the Queen leaves Naboo, and on the way out, their ship gets damaged by the Trade Federation. So then they crash on Tatooine, and then they have to get their ship fixed. So Qui-Gon Jinn and Padme, who's actually Queen Amidala, which, I don't know about y'all, I'll jump back to it. So they decide to hire a slave boy named Annie to go on a deadly race for them, to buy the parts that they need. And Annie's like, sounds great. And then they also are able to haggle this boy's freedom as well. He does the race. And then they're all ready to leave the planet. And then they get stopped by Darth Maul, who's a part of the Sith, for like 3 seconds. And then they leave. That's that section.
Just jumping to the end of that section. That whole thing at the end where Darth Maul's like, hello, I'm here now. And like, they're just like walking. And then all of a sudden they're like running. And they're like, he's chasing us. I'm like, where did he come from? He was just like on top of a mountain a second ago, and now he's like right behind you.
Well, like, they didn't set up Darth Maul at all. As no. Like, I guess you could say Qui-Gon Jinn could like feel that he's evil from the Force, but he's really like, Annie, get down, because he sees his
like, scooter. It, truly, even if he can feel him, like, there's no like lead up to him being like, oh, I can feel him.
And you know? And I get that the vehicle he's on is supposed to be like a motorcycle or something, but it looks like a space scooter to me, and it is the least cool thing I've seen in this entire movie. And that's saying a lot. It's wild. Yeah, the pod racing happens in this section. I do like it.
I will say the pod racing happens.
Happens, and I mean, like,
to
it.
Me, the most iconic thing that came out of this movie is the pod racing game for Nintendo 64, which I loved as a child.
I don't know if I ever played it, honestly.
And
it was really fun. I do remember playing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's like,
it's just a racing game.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a racing game. There's nothing really that special about it other than that it felt cool because the pods seemed cool when I watched the movie as a kid. I mean, I just feel like that scene was like, other than the underwater thing, if I'm going to think about two things from this movie, it's those two things. And then Darth Maul being a cool character, cool looking guy.
I think each third of this movie has like a cool iconic beat. I guess there's four parts technically. So three of the four parts has an iconic beat to it. But getting there and the in-between parts and sometimes the point of those beats are pretty useless. I don't know.
Did you all feel that the pod racing scene was, like, extremely long as adults? Because when I was watching yesterday, I was like, okay, this is still going on. And then they, like, did the lap, and I was like, oh my god, there's a whole nother lap.
It's a legit 14-minute race scene.
Well, the funny thing is, like, I was like, oh, I really have to go to the bathroom. And then Blair was like, well, I'll pause it because this is, like, the best part of the movie. And I was like, okay.
You know what?
I guess we'll pause it.
Also, like, it was, everyone was acting like, oh, this is just, you know, a walk in the park. We're gonna let this 8-year-old child like do this race. Yeah. And people are literally dying. He commits vehicular manslaughter at the very end, and everyone's like, hell yeah. Like, I was like, what? He just killed that person.
Sebulba doesn't die.
Who does he wreck into at the end that like his ship falls over?
Sebulba, but he doesn't die.
Oh, Sebulba kills people though.
Yeah, people
be dying, and they're like, "Oh, it's fine. There's like snipers shooting people. Oh, someone ran into a cave. Cool, whatever."
Yeah. But I mean, that's why the mom was like, "I don't want him to do this." But then she was like, "Well, I guess."
And then she was cheering him on.
But that's okay. Shmi, can we talk about Shmi? One, her name's Shmi, and I.
Oh, that's the fucking mom's name. Oh,
that's the mom's name. It was
like
Shmi.
Peter Pan.
Yeah, but so, she like. Sorry, my brain just went into the fourth dimension for a second. In talking about Shmi, I can't remember the wildest story beat that they decided to throw in. That Anakin is essentially space Jesus. And he is a part of an immaculate conception between Shmi and the Force.
Is that what they're trying to imply? Because I thought it was like going to be... Like, I was like, oh, is the dad like actually like an evil person and that's why she doesn't want to tell him?
No. Oh, no, because she's like, there is no father. It's not like, I don't know who the father is. She says, there is no father. And then she talks about how something about the Force and then she got pregnant. He is Space Jesus. He's Space Jesus.
No.
Yes, he is Space Jesus.
And just like real Jesus, he loses a hand and then turns evil.
Yes. Well, yes. Isn't that like some Shakespeare thing, like Macbeth or something?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know.
One of the wildest story beats they decide to throw in is that he's Space
Jesus. I don't
think
I caught that part, but, you know, my attention span is...
Okay, well, apparently there's theories that Emperor Palpatine was responsible for Anakin's conception through the Force.
Ew.
Ew.
So
ew. Even through the Force, I don't want anything to do with Palpatine.
He sent those like midi-chlorians up there and was like, blah, 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 get her pregnant.
he just like you know, he just
you know.
And then, you know. and then he had his little stuff and he forced it. And then he,
no, ew, stop it, please.
And then he,
can we literally talk about anything else?
And she was like going to the bathroom, and then she was like, "Oh,
what?"
She's like, "Is that a UTI?"
It's like, no, I just got force jizzed up.
Stop it.
Amazing. My favorite part of the whole episode, forced right jizz. Now. Iconic.
That actually sounds like. I mean, it is rape, I guess, technically.
That's... Well, now that you said, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, now that you brought that into the world. So that's why Space Jesus Immaculate Conception is different.
I mean, she still kind of got raped, but we won't go there.
Man, we can't, why, y'all, this is a kids movie.
Is it?
Sadly.
I mean, it's like an everybody movie, I guess.
Yeah.
I
don't know. Yeah, Casey, it's an everybody
movie. I'm sorry.
Movie.
I stand here and I say firmly, all Star Wars movies are kids' movies. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, everyone.
Is this like that fucking interview with Marianne Margulies where she's like, shouldn't the people who liked Harry Potter be grown up by now? Like, why are they still so obsessed with it? I'm like, she's I feel like, the same way about Star Wars.
I know. It's just like, I saw a Harry Potter-themed wedding, and I wonder about their wedding night.
Yeah, she was like, what was your first night of marriage like?
Wild.
She's savage. I love her.
Oh, she's
okay,
amazing.
But this actually says that Plagueis and Palpatine tried to manipulate the Force for their own desires, but the Force didn't like that, so it retaliated and created Anakin, the Chosen One. So I guess the Force is what made the baby, then, is what they're saying. Anyways, yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't actually matter other than that this is so effing weird and the fact that it's just like vaguely said in this.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Also, we find out in this movie, which is the most upsetting thing to Star Wars fans. I don't care about it because whatever. But apparently you can track the amount of force someone has inside of them by how many little bugs are inside of them called midichlorians, which I think is funny and cute.
But also, Isaiah was saying this because I couldn't be bothered to pay this much attention to the movie. But he was, like, saying how it was stupid because, like, in the first three movies, like, the original ones, like, the Force is just, like, this thing. It's almost like faith and religion. Like, you just, like, have it or you don't. But, like, now they're like, oh, we have to, like, really rationalize all this stuff. And, like, there's biological reasons. It's like, no, why? Yeah. Why do we need that?
There is no way that we can show how powerful this kid is in the Force besides... a blood test.
CGI.
There's nothing else that would prove this. It's like wild. I do like the pod race. That part was cool. It is also like a fully CGI scene, which I think is one of the more successful moments.
Yeah, it doesn't look that bad.
Yeah. Probably because things move so fast, which is, you know, every movie now is like just cut so fast.
Yeah. You can tell. The parts that didn't work so well was actually when we cut to the actors' faces and they were clearly like in a blue screen set, like more so than other things. But still,
and by actors you mean like the one that wasn't fake?
Like,
I was gonna say everybody else is a CGI like thing.
You know what? You got me. No, but some of them were puppets for no reason too. They're like, we're gonna CGI some actually. Of these. Some
okay,
of them
you know
puppets.
What? Also, I gotta give a shout out to that Greedo kid. Because I fucking love him.
Oh, yeah, the little short kid. I just want to
that
pick
looks
him
like
up
Greedo.
Yeah, he's so cute.
I don't remember him.
He's like, it's one of Anakin's little friends, and he's the only one that's not human. He's like a little alien guy. Yeah.
He looks like a seahorse face.
Yeah, he has like the little... and he shot first, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't that Greedo, right?
I don't know. Sure.
Yeah, Greedo shot first. That's like the Han Solo thing. I don't know.
Spoilers. I don't like that movie either.
Whatever. That's fine. I also am not like that good. Hype about it, but.
Yeah. No. The race is cool. Again, it's such a long scene. I did laugh multiple times when Anakin was like talking to Qui-Gon Jinn, and he's like, "I think you're here to free the slaves," and he was just like, "Nope."
Yeah, he's like, "No."
So fast to be like, "Not here to do that at all." Actually.
Also, the most racist of the characters is in this as well. So,
I would
argue maybe the worst offense.
Watu, the anti-Semitic fly. Yeah.
He's pretty not great. Horrible.
Yeah. For some reason, George Lucas was able to create such cool aliens in the first trilogy, and this one, he's like, "What about racial stereotypes for this one? What if I did that? It's just weird. It's bad choices." There is an edit of this movie called the Anti-Cheese Edit, which is typically the way I watch this. And what they did is they edited down all the unimportant plot points. They essentially cut out, like, the first 30 minutes of this was like a 10-minute long sequence at best. They like cut out all the gunk and stuff because they're like, "You don't need it." Reduced all of Jar Jar Binks' scenes, and then they redid the voiceovers for all of the aliens to like fix as much as they could. And it's 1,000 times better. I still want to watch it. It
sounds better.
I think they cut it down from like 2 hours and 10 minutes to like a 90-minute movie.
Wow.
Perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. It truly was like, it fixed the pacing problems in it too. Also, if people don't know, editing wise, the first trilogy was edited by George Lucas's at that time wife. But then they got divorced, so she no longer edited the movies, which is also why it drastically feels different.
Are there this many, like, things that I feel like very pandering to present-day audiences in the original three? Like, I feel like the whole pod race scene with, like the sports commentators, I'm like, this doesn't feel like something that would be in the original ones. Like, I feel like they were trying to be like, oh, it's this other galaxy where there's aliens and it doesn't have to necessarily relate to American pop culture. And I'm like, it felt very pandering.
I forget where I heard it, but someone essentially said the original three Star Wars movies were trying to create like a space opera and were very much like alluding to previous things in the sci-fi genre. And we're like recreating those like old movies essentially and those story beats. So like it was kind of making its own thing out of something that had already been done before.
Yeah.
The prequel trilogy was trying to create a Star Wars movie. So they essentially took the original movie and like, well, this is the genre. How do we make our own movie on the genre we already created? Mm-hmm. Which is also why it feels weird and flat, because people hate the prequel trilogy, not the prequel, the sequel trilogies as well. I actually think they're the best three out of it. Sorry, everyone.
I think Rogue One is the best movie out of all of them.
I think the last third of Rogue One is a good movie.
Where are you going, Liz?
She's taking a picnic. She got a big old bag.
Also Keira Knightley. I was like, oh, I didn't fucking remember Keira Knightley existed in this movie, but yeah, anyways, that's all I need to say about that.
Wait, she's in this movie?
Yeah, Queen Amidala has a devil.
Oh, she's the devil.
Yeah, Keira Knightley plays Queen Amidala sometimes when Natalie Portman is being Padme. Natalie Portman being so flat as the queen is supposed to be like, oh, it's other people can be her, and it makes sense, but...
Oh, that was like a... I don't think that was a... I think it was literally Natalie Portman trying to not have the headdress fall off her head. She was like, I am not moving. I am doing all my acting in my own. Hello.
It was a choice because you can clearly see Keira Knightley doing the exact same voice. Intonation the whole time, where it's like, this feels like a George Lucas thing of being like, remember, it's a secret, so you all have to talk the same, so it'd be as flat and as motionless as possible. And I'm like, what a great idea for a character. So they leave the planet, they see Darth Maul, they're like, ugh, he's a bad guy, hope he doesn't come back. They go to the Senate, and the Senate's like, we're gonna help you, JK, we're gonna have a commission put together, and we're gonna see if you're lying to us or not, Queen Amidala. We don't know if there's a war or not. And so then Queen Amidala, after talking to Senator Palpatine, I wonder who he is, decides to essentially oust the current leader of the Republic. And then before anything else can happen, she does that and she's like, we're going back to Naboo now. Goodbye, everyone. And I was like, why did we go to the Senate? They head back to Naboo. They talk to the Gungans and they're like, hey, let's join forces. Then let's fight off the Trade Federation. They do.
They do the thing.
Yeah, they decide to bring Anakin into a war zone, and they're like, it'll be fine. Tell him to hide in a spaceship. He goes into space. He blows up a giant spaceship and saves the day, reminiscent of, like, the first movie. Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi fight Darth Maul because he's also there for reasons. Darth Maul kills Qui-Gon Jinn, and then Obi-Wan Kenobi cuts him in half. He falls into a hole.
The people in the theater laugh.
They laugh. The Trade Federation, like, the two main people have guns pointed on them. They're like, we give up. And then there's a big party where the leader of the Gungan gives a glowing orb or something to someone. And then they all say, yay, this is cool.
I recognize that I wasn't really, like, paying so much attention, especially in the last 45 minutes to an hour of this movie. But, yeah. Like, did it... The ending, does it feel really sudden to anyone else?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, the war happens, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then we do, like, a cut to this other thing, and, like, people are celebrating. I'm like, oh, okay, there's a celebration, the war's gonna happen. I'm like, oh, that's the end of the movie.
They literally burn Qui-Gon Jinn's body. They make this little kid watch this, you know, body be burned. And then they cut to a giant celebration, and you're like, cool, party, I guess. Great.
Party.
Party.
The last bit of this movie takes like 20 minutes, and it's the majority of the action, the most plot relevant part of everything too. And it really is sped through so quickly. And I was like, I'm so glad we took the time to set up, I don't know, all of this for nothing.
Well, the only parts they spend time on is fucking Jar Jar Binks being an idiot.
Yeah, Jar Jar in battle. And he saves the day a bit.
Okay, hot take. But I think the droids, I think their design, they're so cute. They're like long little faces. Oh, yeah. I think they're adorable. Who could hurt a droid?
The clones,
yeah.
Yeah.
The little droids, yeah. That's, they're so like cute. Little armadillos, but like skinny.
That is what they look like. Especially, and then the like ones that the little balls.
I feel like I like the ones that have the little like nose things that they have to.
Yeah.
That like Jar Jar in the one shop, he's like, push the nose.
Yeah, those are cute.
And too. They're also at the
little discs.
Yeah.
Anakin being like, push the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did it. Sorry, that's mean.
It was a choice. Yeah. It was a choice by George Lucas because Kate Winslet had to play Anakin Skywalker in those certain scenes.
I wish it was
Kate Winslet.
I don't know.
But also unnecessary things. It's like, I liked those little droids. I thought they were cute. But at one point, randomly, they're like the Three Stooges, like slapping each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? Okay.
During the pod racing. Yeah, also Samuel Jackson shows up at one point for some reason, so that's cool.
Yeah.
He wanted to be in the movies, and so George Lucas said, sure, sure,
buddy. Michael Jackson wanted to be in the movies, but George Lucas didn't let him.
Well, Michael Jackson wanted to be one of the main characters. Samuel L. Jackson just wanted to be in the movie, and he said, cool, I can put you in a seat.
You can sit in a chair.
But and I will say, in future iterations, he gets a lightsaber, but he purposely... Purple. Yeah, because he wanted to stand out in the big crowd fights so people could see who he was. Because he's what? Smart.
Because he's cool. And Darth Maul having the double-edged lightsaber is also pretty fucking sick. So
I like his design in general. He's also, he's not the fight choreographer for this, but he's like one of the stunt people. Too, so also, I think he also helped them train in like the lightsaber shit.
I can't remember if I've already said this on the podcast before, but my most interesting Star Wars fact is the fact that Darth Maul has a piercing, like a cartilage piercing. Have I said this on the podcast?
I think you have. But I think you did, yeah. Because it was a long time ago. I don't remember what it is.
So he has a cartilage piercing, and it's because the guy who's playing Darth Maul accidentally left it in his ear. And they filmed some scenes with it, and they were like, well, shit, I guess we're going to have to just leave this in your ear. And now every single iteration of Darth Maul has the cartilage piercing because it's like actually canon to the character, but it was literally just like an accident. Like,
yeah.
And so I love that even like the cartoon like versions of him has like a little cartilage piercing.
He's like, I go to Hot Topic.
Yeah.
I looked up the actor... after watching the movie yesterday who played Darth Maul, because I just was like, what does he look like? I did not expect him to be just some like mediocre looking white dude. Like,
oh yeah,
he looks friendly, but I was just like, oh, that's what you look like.
He plays Toad in the X-Men movie, the very first one, who Storm is like, do you know what happens to a toad that gets struck by lightning?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do not remember that character.
He's iconic because he is iconic. He has
a tongue. He has a.
He has a tongue.
He's got a forced tongue. Yeah. I will say, to me as a kid, the best part of this movie was the fight scene, the lightsaber fight scene. I do think it's really well choreographed. It's really cool.
Can we talk about, because we're talking about that scene at the end, the fucking song that everyone lost their minds for in like 1999?
Love Let Us Hear.
No, like the song where they're fighting to. It's like really intense. I don't remember what they called it.
Is it the dun 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 dun?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Now I gotcha. I was like, I actually have no idea.
Clearly, that's also the title of the song. So it's all dun 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 dun.
Oh, it's like oh Fortuna or something. There's like words to it actually.
Oh Fortuna. Have y'all seen, so the new Dune movie has like the weird yodeling voice thing in it. Yes. I don't know. Have you seen that someone someone put a picture of Kurt from Glee on there and that's the only thing I can hear now. It sounds like him singing it.
Oh my god. Also, have you seen the like the meme of like that person that looks like Timothy Chalamet that's voguing and it's like when Paul learns how to walk on the sand to not alert the worms.
Oh my gosh.
It's I did so see a video fucking funny.
Of Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya talking about like learning to do that walk and everything, and then they do a clip from the movie and I was like, I hate sci-fi sometimes.
Oh, that's like a question I had for you both of you actually, like, what are your feelings on sci-fi? Like the genre as a whole?
I'm mid.
Yeah. I like what I like, but there's a lot I don't. I will say for the most part, I hate like sci-fi novels that are not YA. They are so long and so boring.
Too many, it's for me, it's the same so thing much. As like high fantasy. There's too many characters. Yep. There's too many storylines to follow. Like I need
names I can't remember because they're so wild. Totally. Yeah, I like it better in a movie, but honestly, like, I'll take, like, an Aliens when it comes to sci-fi, because it's a blend of sci-fi and horror, more than just straight sci-fi.
We don't like straights. Sorry, Liz.
I was surprised by how much I liked Dune 2, because I did not like the first Dune movie, because I felt like it was exactly what I don't like about sci-fi, where it was just, like, all these people, and it was just, like, bleh. Like, I felt like a slog to get through.
Everyone has, like, the weirdest names you've ever heard in your life.
Yeah, except for Paul.
Well, in another movie that's about like trade, essentially, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's about
like the spice, and you're just like, okay, cool,
great. Like when you bring the trade home after the night at the club, and exactly. You get murdered, and then you are crystallized and return after a bad night of hooking at the club.
Now that's the kind of sci-fi I do like.
Yes, Kennedy.
But yeah, I'm very mid on sci-fi. But I'm also kind of mid on fantasy. So it's like, I do like a lot of YA fantasy for that same reason, Casey. I think it's just like,
Casey summed it up well. Like, I like what I like, honestly. That's, that's
where it's like Animorphs is sci-fi. I love it. Steven Universe is like a fantasy sci-fi. I love it so much.
Yeah.
She-Ra is also like fantasy. Love it. Voltron is sci-fi. I love it.
I mean, even like X-Men is like, you know, somewhere in there. Like,
have either of you read these books? N.K. Jemisin, The City We Became?
No.
It's like fantasy sci-fi, but like set in New York. And like, I don't know, it's a lot more easy to digest, I think, than like each of the boroughs of New York City has like a persona and they have like powers and stuff. It's really cool. I like it.
It's like Inside Out, but like New York City.
Exactly. Just like
It's like Divergence. That's what that was. Where they had each section. They're like, ooh, I forget what they're called. They're like, I'm abdicate and I'm indulgence.
Yeah.
I'm avarice and I'm sloth.
I read all those. Star Wars.
I would say why I'm like this, but apparently I'm not, because I didn't like this. So I think we can sum that up right there.
I mean, this was an iconic moment. And
even things you rewatch and are like, oh, that wasn't great. Like, I still think they shaped us. So why are you bad, Casey?
Why am I bad? I do. Here's the weird thing is I do love bad movies. We know this about me.
Yeah.
I truly love bad movies. I do think this goes on the other side. And I know Star Wars fans are many, many Star Wars fans and fans of this podcast overlap. I know. I'm so sorry out there for all of you. I think this is the like the boring side of bad because it's just so plot heavy. As a kid, it did have cool stuff to look at visually. I do like monsters. Mm-hmm. I do like spaceships. Mm-hmm. Whenever George Lucas does practical effects, I do think they look great.
Yeah, for sure.
Whoever he hires to do his concept designs are really cool. And I think his world building is really interesting. I just don't think plotting is essentially his thing. So
because, as we all know, everybody loves puppets, okay?
And everybody loves puppets! Yes!
There should just be more puppets. Like, it's really the answer.
100%.
Less CGI, which, more puppets.
I'll say in the newer movies, it's what I like, is that they actually blend the two really mm-hmm. well. And they try to rely on practical effects as much as they can, mm-hmm. Which I think works. But before we wrap up the podcast, I'd like to let you know that you can find us on Instagram at Why Am I Like This Podcast or Facebook on our Generation Why Am I Like This fan page. We never do two takes here on this podcast. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can also have an email, which is whyamilikethis@gmail.com.
Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. Tell us how you would bully a child into quitting their acting career.
Tell us how you would send it. No, that's sad. No, nothing for me.
Let's see so many good things. I'll go first. I'm very excited this week. The first thing is, okay, so I listened, I don't think anyone who listens to this podcast really cares about this artist. I listened to the Ariana Grande album and it's kind of a snooze fest, but
I loved it.
It's kind of a snooze fest, but the song We Can't Be Friends is certified bop. It is beautiful. And it actually, I was telling Isaiah this, I was like the bass line, and it has like the same feel as like Dancing on My Own by Robin. And then literally that night I got on TikTok and someone like did a remix where they put them together and I lost my mind. I was like, ah.
Vince and I were listening to it and I literally started singing like Dancing on My Own. I was like, it's the same beat.
Yeah.
Did you watch the music video for it?
Yeah, it's just Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
But I literally think that's like, such a cool homage it's like, to it. Yeah.
Shot for shot. So and also with, what's his name? From American Horror Story.
Yeah, I can't remember his name right now. I mostly bring it up because the music video was actually on my list of many good things this week. Because I loved it. I thought it was actually really cool.
I think it's, like, fun. The song, though, is, like, I think a perfect, one of, the, like, the few perfect songs that have come out this year so far. I have one more thing. It is this weekend. It was kind of rainy and gross on Saturday. So I held a gun to Isaiah's head. I said, we're going to the movies. And we saw the film Problemista. And it was really, really, really fucking good. It was really playful in a way I wasn't sure I was going to see in the movie. It was really funny, but also had like a lot of heart to it. It has to deal with this like young man who has moved from El Salvador to the United States. His dream is to become a toy designer, but he's having a hard time getting a sponsor so he can stay in the country legally. They just have a lot of fun like playing with the imagery of him trying to, you know, face this battle. There's like a lot of allegorical stuff with him facing down, especially Tilda Swinton, which is she's ridiculous in this movie. It's voiced by Isabella Rossellini, which is hilarious. I really like this movie. I think both of you should see it, and I think a lot of people should see it because it was just very entertaining and fun to watch. Also, Larry Owens has a larger part than I thought he was going to have in the movie, and he's like the embodiment of Craigslist.com, and he's really funny. He's always just like, foot fetish, use treadmill. It's just like stupid stuff the whole time. He's a comedic genius. But yeah, go see Problemista in very select theaters. I don't know if it's getting a wider release, honestly, but if it comes anywhere near you or if it goes on streaming or to rent in the future, do that.
It'll be at Screenland.
Oh yay. Ooh. When is it? Go there.
I think 2 weeks.
Nice. I can't wait to hear what you think.
Liz, do you want to go?
Listen.
Sure. I think for mine, I am going to do... I will also do a movie. I feel like I've been watching a lot of movies lately, and I've really enjoyed it, and I just... have to say,
you say that like you've never watched movies before.
I know, but it's just like I've really been enjoying going to the movies.
I'm really into voguing lately.
And I mean, I did see Dune 2 and I did enjoy Dune 2. It was very good. But more importantly, I also saw the Oscar nominated film Perfect Days, which was a Japanese film. It was nominated for the Best International Picture. And it was literally a movie about a man who cleans toilets in Japan. And it was like just his days. And it was a slow movie. He doesn't talk very much. But I cannot tell you how absolutely enthralled I was with this movie. And it's just, it just made me like, happy slash a little bit sad that I can't appreciate life a little bit more. Like, he was like, he would go to the park and eat his lunch and like take a photo of the trees and watch the trees move around, and like he just like appreciated the small things in life, and it was really beautiful and a stellar soundtrack.
Make me cry like crazy.
It was so good. I just really liked it, and I love going to the theater because I put my phone away for over 2 hours and I watch a movie and I don't look at my phone. And that movie made me wanted to look at my phone less, which we'll see how that goes. But I just wish that we could escape a little bit more. And it's hard. So
it's why I love going to the theater, too. It's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's mine.
Nice. Really nice, Liz.
Nice.
I actually have a few, so I'm going to try and do a little speed run. As we've talked about, I do like Fortnite on this channel. And recently they did a collaboration with Lady Gaga, and it was super fun. You essentially had to do, like, essentially Guitar Hero to try and get extra points to unlock, like, a Lady Gaga skin. And then she danced to a couple of her songs from Chromatica, and I had a great time on it. It was super fun. Next is there's the Netflix Avatar The Last Airbender, and that series came out. While that's not my mini good thing, I'd give it a solid 5 out of 10, if I'm being honest. However, from the D&D Let's Play show, the like most popular one called Critical Role, there's an actress, her name's Marisha Ray, on it. On her Instagram, she started doing reviews of the episodes of Avatar on it. On her Instagram stories, and I had a wonderful time watching her reviews. It essentially was like someone heard what I was thinking in my own brain and said it out loud, and so it was just wonderful. And it's every so now it's and then
like
it's
like an echo chamber.
Yes, every now
it's like
and then
you're looking into a mirror.
It's nice to get confirmation. There were a few things that I didn't like originally, but when she kind of talked about them too, I was like, oh, I see what they're going for now. That actually makes me like it a little bit more. So that was nice. But for the most part, it was like, ah, yes. Like, it's nice to know that I'm not being hypercritical as just a random fan. This is someone who actually works in the industry and is talking about, like, how they kind of saw things. So that was nice. My last thing is my new favorite meme. And if y'all have seen this before, let me know. If not, I'm going to send you a link. But in the 90s in Chile, they aired the Star Wars movies, the original trilogy. But they didn't want to do ad breaks.
Yes. Oh my God. This was wild.
And so they added in cuts of like pre-filmed things of them holding the beer Cerveza Cristal. And I cannot get enough of these little moments. Like Senator Palpatine, or I guess Emperor Palpatine in that movie, sitting on his big throne. And then him sticking out his hand. And then it's a horribly gloved hand that just pulls up a beer. And it has the Cerveza Cristal theme. I am obsessed with it. I've laughed so much. I also thought it was perfect timing knowing we were going to talk about this episode.
The algorithm always knows.
It knows. The universe provided some humor on, you know, this adventure we had to go on. And let me tell you, it was a difficult one. We have. I truly, sorry to everyone who loves this movie, I truly thought it was a slog. I had a hard time with this one.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was good. That all your many good things?
Yeah.
You want to talk about Ariana Grande's music video?
I already did. Do I need to say more? I liked it.
Okay, great.
I liked the album. I thought it was fun. I didn't think it was anything wild, but I kind of liked... I put it on when I was driving, and I actually was like the perfect music to drive to.
Actually fell asleep and crashed your car.
Yeah, and then I died because I was saying it was boring like you did, because we have the same opinions on things. Yeah.
Literally, yeah. Cool. Cool.
Yeah. Cool. But that's our episode.
Yay.
Weird energy to end.
No. We've ended on weirder notes, Liz, believe me. Speaking of Liz, Liz has the next episode. Liz, what are you going to talk about? Because you don't have it written down.
I didn't know I had the next episode.
Ooh, mystery episode. Yeah. It's not a pattern at all.
No.
Oh, no. Is it really mine?
Think about it.
Yeah, it is.
Do I have to say right now?
No. It'll be a surprise.
Okay. Oh,
for
sorry,
the three
everyone.
People who listen to this every week.
It would break the conceit. Oh my gosh, our whole podcast is ruined. No one knows what's going to happen.
Nobody cares.
Cool. On that note, goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Oh, bye.
Still come back next week, though.
Please.
Well, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
This is our best ending yet. Bye.